money bill that we have passed, the general will be looking at that fiscal issue about whether we have performed, talking about department, not you as individual, talking about department, whether we have performed to assist us to transform and develop sport in our country. And the issue of the schools of excellence is very critical. And therefore, when you take us through any issue here, try again to capture some of those issues. Because they will assist us to understand whether we are making progress or not progress. As I'm saying again, that it is in the interest of an accounting officer to give all the necessary information to the committee in order for the committee to hold the executive authority accountable to it. Without information, we won't be able to do our work. Therefore, we think that we do that with respect and diligence. And then, of course, you bear in mind again that there will always be healthy tension between the committee and yourself. We have healthy tension because you want to give us information, you may refuse to give us information, doing other things that you wouldn't want. But it is important that there will be always healthy tension. Therefore, when members of parliament teach you, you must just understand that you are doing that precisely because there will always be healthy tension. There will be nothing personal. And therefore, we think that we should say that the Director General, because you are briefing the Federal Committee, and I know that you are responsible for running the whole department in terms of accounting and cutting those issues. We thought that I should raise this thing to the Director General, because then we understand where we stand. All of us, at the beginning of our time, would be easy to work together. When you come before us without some of these issues, we would accept and we say, no, the Director General, go back, we are not well prepared. We'll accept that. And then that's what really I think we should say for you to know how you are going to go. And therefore, we are most welcome on this if you can take us through on many issues that you think the committee must be informed upon. The floor is given to you. Of course, before I do that, I know that formally we didn't put their apologies. An apology that honorable members want to present. It's important members here. Yeah. No apologies accepted. General Banjul is an acceptable member of our committee. From time to time we'll be here, sometime we'll be here. Generally, we understand. And they will notice it every time when it's not available. And of course, members are over, especially if you are one member of parliament with 40 committees, that you can't communicate with us. Yeah, but we'll move on. We represent our colleagues. The Director General, let me call upon you then to present the report to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thank you. Let me welcome the opportunity to present before the committee and to also indicate our appreciation for the spirit with which the committee welcomes us in shaping how we work towards the future. And indeed assure the committee that we have no intention whatsoever to withhold any information from the committee, and we would indeed oblige to provide the committee with the information it requires to make informed decisions at all times, and that is a pledge and a commitment we can make in advance to make sure that our relations with the committee are indeed complementary, while we account that the committee also becomes an important platform for us as representatives of the people to support us and also to assist us in lobbying for more resources and more access to promote sport. So let me do that. And I also want to take this opportunity, Chair, to wish all members Happy Valentine's Day. not necessarily look at sports as a separate sector. They view it within the broader social sector. Or
section 2, 1, 1, 2.
I'm sure it's not me. So we have that difficulty, therefore, of determining quite succinctly the exact figures of the job creation processes and platforms at which jobs are created in the sports sector as a standalone. So consequently, while government has taken a decision to only rely on the statistics collected by StatsSA, but we have recognized that all of the platforms and information gathering techniques do not necessarily separate sports and make it a standalone. So we are then forced to look at the alternative sources of information, and what the challenge and the limitation with this is that they really can't be fully vouched for in terms of what they provide. And therefore the figures would largely remain estimates. So the estimates can only later be vouched for if we independently do a survey ourselves, and which will look into specifics of sports as a whole. But we then looked at a research company working in the sporting sector called BMI in South Africa. And this is an independent. This is an independent sport research company. Their report for 2011 indicates that, which is the latest report available, indicates that the contribution of to the creation of jobs within the sports and recreation sector specifically has led to about 60,800 full-time workers in the sports industry, and a further estimated 9,500 part-time workers, and about 13,250 volunteers. All this add up to approximately a total of 3,550 full employment within the sports sector. Apart from the statistics, many volunteers as well as vendors who work at events during study are the ones who either sell food or sell paraphernalia or many others are also there, and they are not necessarily included within the statistics. However, the figures fluctuate significantly from one year to the next, depending on the specific project. I'm sure you may have seen that during the World Cup and also during the number of major sporting tournaments the country has hosted, these vendors then increase largely in size, and also for smaller matches they are quite few. So the figures are quite varied and would need a dedicated method of measurements to see to what extent seasonal jobs have been created within the site. But it was estimated that about 20,000 workers were involved in the construction of housing and venues for the All Africa Games held in South Africa, and during the development of the Takisa motor racing track in Welkom in the Free State. We are also looking at the jobs, about 100,000 jobs which have been created in the construction sector during the building of stadia for the 2010 FIFA World Cup.
Testing 1, 2. This is awesome. Yeah, testing
We'll soldier on. And the further 44,000 new jobs were created in the police service as a consequence of the World Cup, and to provide sufficient security as an outflow for sports and recreation. In addition, about 15,000 volunteers were formally trained for FIFA and the organizing committee in the running of the event. These are only the volunteers that were accredited by FIFA. But you will also note that there were many other volunteers which are accredited by host cities themselves, and who were to do tourist guides and all those type of things. But at the department, our statistics for 2011-2012 ourselves currently where we stand is that we have 210 employees, and 93 of them being women and disabled. We are in the process of restructuring right now. Since the minister introduced the roadmap to sport excellence and development, and we have adopted the National Sport and Recreation Plan from the INDAO last year, we are now forced to relook at how we are structured, because necessarily structure should follow strategy, and with the change in strategy and focus, we have to look at how we are structured and how we look like. So we have not been filling any vacancies on the existing structure. We've got quite a few, and we have not been doing much except doing the structuring. The restructuring process is going quite smooth. The only challenge is that the unions are quite slow in responding to all the proposals we put before them in the chamber. We are however confident that we would be in a position to have finalized all the restructuring process by April this year, and which would enable us to then fill the new vacancies on the new structure. We are currently offering an internship program, and we have a total of 18 on an internship program that is in the search to grow to about 26 of them in the next 3 financial years. The main program within Sport and Recreation South Africa that is contributing to job creation is in mass participation program. This encapsulates both the support to clubs, to the school system, but also to recreation. So the job creation in the recreation sector is quite difficult to measure, because here we also have to look at people within the fitness industry as well. And we also have got to look at people who work as personal trainers and so on. And right now, as you are aware, Chair, we have not necessarily been able to finalize the regulations around the fitness industry. The current regulation, draft regulations that are on the
table
will need to be relooked at quite succinctly, because we want a wall-to-wall type of military environment, including on the norms and standards for safety on the equipment to be used, and including on the ratios and of trainer to trainees. We have to look at all that and include them in the regulation. So as a consequence, there is no registration process currently unfolding about who are people working in the fitness industry. So to measure employment in that space is quite difficult. And also volunteers who work on the recreational side is quite difficult to determine. And to also, on the basis of the country's laws, to determine whether it's employment or not. All we can look at is the volunteers that we are currently providing for. But the mass participation program coordinators are appointed and receive monthly stipends. And in the conditional grants that we give to provinces, we actually allow them to utilize a percentage of the grant towards appointing people who work in the program. Currently, all provinces except 3 are using the allocation of the grant for purposes of appointment of volunteers. So the 3 provinces that are currently not utilizing these funds are Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Northwest. We have had also to issue them with certificates to allow them to utilize the money for other programs, owing to the fact that they have not used them for what was intended to do. So we are having this as a challenge, because, for instance, in the Northwest, the reason why... The reason why the... The reason the Northwest can't go on and appoint people is that it is facing litigation at
yes, you're coming through. Yeah, English, yes, you're coming through. Zulu, yes, Zulu, 1, 2. 1, 2, yes, you're coming through. This is the second control. You come to English. You
Yes, English.
Thank you. is not their money. Sport resides elsewhere. There is not even a guest that deals with sport and recreation at the local level. So those are the issues that start.
Thank you.
Honorable
Shivan.
Thank you. Also be in the position to understand
Chairperson, before I start, Chairperson, I think we've got to give you a crash course in romance. You know, if you want to score the goal, you need to understand something about. Anyway, I won't take it any further. But maybe a dinner with your wife tonight might be a bad idea. DG, thank you. I'm also going to talk about the column on the statistics for South Africa, which I think don't tell the true story at all. Now, we, as a committee, have often said that we believe that sport and rec should be in the economic cluster, not the social cluster, because of the very issue that we're talking about today, which is employment and what this sector does for our economy. What I'd like to know is, you talk about 83,550 people in employment. I think that's vastly underrated. For example, are all the players who receive salaries in that figure? Are all the police that work around the stadiums, are they in that figure? Are all the traffic officials who are involved, all the medical staff that monitor these things, are they involved? The security people. And then what about the clothing industry, the manufacturing industry? These people are all supplying massive amounts of equipment, kits, supplies, etc., etc. And then, of course, we go into tourism. I wonder if SAA and British Airways in this country would give you a number of how many sports people and officials, federation officials, whatever, are actually traveling. I think we'd be shocked at the actual impact what sport has now for our country. I mean, tourism is huge and we've touched on it, but I really think, DG, you said we don't have an accurate quantitative survey, but I think it's time we did, because I think if we did, I think you'd find a vastly different picture to the one that's been painted here. Thank you. Sorry, and I would just like to endorse what my colleague on my right said about the MIG funds. Maybe the time has come, as in Lotta, and we've discussed the Lotta issue as well, that those funds are placed somewhere else in trust, so provinces and municipalities can in fact utilize those monies for the reasons that it was intended.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Sutai.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. And thank you, TG, for your presentation. And I think I heard you correctly that you were saying that the detailed report on job creation was given to the poorest. So it's unfortunate we don't have it now. That's why we are asking so many questions. And my first question, Chair, will be on the, I think the department is having three NGOs or more than that, that is also that is supporting. That is your Sport Trust, your Love Life, and your SCORE. So can we get also the information, especially on job creation, because I know that they're doing something on the community of Spain. And secondly, Chair, with regards to the jobs that have been identified for 2010 World Cup, do you have any database of the department? I think my question will relate to the one that is asked by the Honourable Mr. Khashi. A database of some kind
we've got only 14 vacancies on the current structure out of staff complement. We have 210 current employees, plus we have 14 vacancies. And, we have decided that because we are currently restructuring, that we shouldn't proceed with the filling of vacancies, because it will not be prudent to do so when some positions are being matched and some new ones are being created. So we rather await the finality of the process, and also the accord we have agreed with the union on, it will look like we're negotiating in that phase when we are filling other vacancies while we're talking about rationalizing some sections of the platform. So we've got only 14 vacancies right now, and however, when the new structure is finalized, we're likely to have much more vacancies. I think the key issue related there to us, why is it so difficult for the department to fill positions? I don't think it is a challenge only peculiar to us as sports. I think it's a government-wide challenge, and the problem is that cabinet has taken a decision that everybody who's to be appointed on a level 15 upwards, all of them have got to be vetted first and foremost, and that prior to appointment, verification of their qualifications by the qualifications authority has got to be done. Now, with the qualifications authority, it's a bit more easier. It takes on average about 2 months for them to tell you whether the person has the qualification he or she claims to be having. But as it relates to the National Intelligence Agency, it's a totally different story. Sometimes you wait up to 4 or 5 months for them to give you a vetting certificate of a person. Some people are also supposed to be, particularly say those who have essential access to important information in terms of the NIS document, and they are supposed to get the top clearance certificate. Often after 3 months or 4 months, you'll only get that they'll say, what we have done can only certify this person at confidential level. That's not enough. I mean, you can appreciate that. Therefore, most DGs simply take a view that says we will await until they give, because otherwise you are violating cabinet resolution and you are exposing yourself to undue risk, even with the Auditor General, that should it be discovered that this person indeed does not have the qualifications, but or ultimately does not pass the security clearance test. Now you are sitting with a challenge that you are sitting with this person already, and what you can do, and which may open up to litigation. So we have since raised this matter at the governance cluster, and to say that something really needs to be done. But on our own, we have also decided with the support of the minister that when we are done with restructuring, because we would then need to advertise many positions all at once, and it may be a tall order to get near to be able to finish everything in time. So we have agreed with the minister that we will do a conditional appointment. We would appoint people on condition that they ultimately pass the security clearance, and that ultimately the qualifications authority confirms the qualifications they are claiming. Failing which, we then would have the right to terminate employment immediately, and also to recover all the money that would have been paid already. And this is the type of contract we are currently envisaging for future recruitment, and which will help us circumvent the long, tedious process. So 3 months, 4 months down the line, if the qualifications authority say you do not have the qualifications, we will have every right to terminate the employment immediately and to recover all the monies paid from the state. I think that's the route as a department we have decided we would undertake because of the challenges that are there. The second issue was why the provinces are not using the 6%. I had already given an example in respect of Northwest, but in the case of Limpopo and Mpumalanga, it was really a mixed the key things is that there was always a misunderstanding between the national department and provinces and between ourselves and Tesla about what could be done. I think what is hampering progress is that we are of the view that we should give slightly long-term contracts, about 3 to 5 year contracts, because you can't appoint a person and re-advertise each year and so on. It's quite a tedious thing and it's just not workable. And these people also need to be trained and so on. And after training, then you have to look at new people, you know. And immediately it doesn't augur well for the continuity of the program and also for the investment we're making in training. But Treasury has always been adamant to say you can't give people long-term employment on the basis of the conditional grant that is reviewed each year. And I think this has created a huge challenge and a chasm between us and them where we stand. But we have engaged with them this year as part of the restructuring process and part of the process we're envisaging. We're looking at retaining a portion of the conditional grant and from national office, ourselves appointing staff in provinces and who will be paid from centrally, but they will be working in provinces and on the ground. So this is what we see as a long-term solution, but it is subject to obviously our structure proposal being approved and obviously Treasury agreeing to cut a portion of the conditional grant and putting it into the budget that we have on an NCHAS cycle. So we're looking at that as a long-term solution because right now provinces find themselves in a catch of what do they have to do, and we are also eagerly looking at the conclusion of the litigation in the West because whichever way the court case goes, it will determine what is going to happen in many other provinces. And so we are supporting the Northwest in terms of that case. Then there's an issue of whether we have an IGF strategy to ensure coordination with provinces to enhance job creation. Indeed, yes, we are working with provinces. I think the statistics we give also encapsulate what provinces are doing. I think that one key thing is that Cabinet had taken a resolution that 2011 was the year of job creation and that everybody needed to focus on this. Our MINMEC last year looked at this issue and also agreed on what needs to be done. I think the key challenge with this is that while the Sports and Recreation Department may put resources available to provinces as well as to federations, the reality of the matter is that federations remain autonomous. And in the past, we had not necessarily set the requisite conditions which will follow strategy in terms of what we want to achieve and place the resources to match complement that strategy. But this year, our negotiations with the federations, their funding formula will look grossly very different. And I'm sure maybe you will hear many complaints in the media about what we are trying to do because not all federations are going to like what we are doing. They are used to the idea of simply being given the money. They will get it anyway. You know, that's how it has been working. But right now we are introducing a dual funding process. We have a guaranteed budget that we will give just to make sure that the federations don't collapse. They can be able to pay rent and pay the administrators and do all this. But then there is money which is a potential budget you can only see through the window. You only access it if you are meeting the milestones that we set. If you bring us enough players of color and your talent identification program is on the ground and so on, you will get X percentage of the money. If you are able to create more jobs and do all these things with X percentage of money, you will get, and if you are able to support school support system and you work harder in that area, that's how much you get. The more you accredit coaches at level one, the coaching framework, whatever it change course, because we have, for the past 18 or so years, been declaring that we are not transforming in this life, and it has not been helpful, and also the quotas have not really necessarily yielded what we wanted it to, but we now have this tool. And the other important tool is that it's political premium that we must set. The Federation wants to host international tournament. They want support from government for this or that. They want support for government for them to access funding from the private sector and so on. That political premium, we're not going to give it anymore for free just like that. It will have to be and carefully in terms of our priorities. So I think this in the long run will address the issue, including the issue of job creation, because we will then use the funding we give as a tool to say, additionally, this is how much potential you are looking at if you are able to train people and you are able to do internship programs and you are able to do these things, you will get additionally this for further employment of people. I think that's really the strategy we are undertaking now, and it's not easy. The variables we're putting in this basket, we are carefully selecting so that we also don't overburden, particularly the smaller federations that really have no capacity to do anything. The last thing we want is for the federations to totally collapse, because it just can't match what we are doing. So we are carefully choosing what we are, and therefore, consequently, by this time, we should have long received the business plans for federations, but we are only now at the stage of negotiating the actual conditions with them. So we will be slightly late. I think they will get their money. Typically, they get the first grant on the first week of April. But we think that this year they would likely get their first grant around May, June, because we are going to be late, but we will put every measures. Otherwise, we miss the bus for another year, which doesn't really help anybody. So we think that it's rather worth the wait, with the risk, obviously, of treasury savings who are not spending, but we have to look at that. The downside to this strategy is that if federations don't meet the requirements, then there's going to be so much underexpended, because we would not have given the federation the money that they used to get. But I think that is the price we may have to pay. Otherwise, there will never be transformation. We rather see it with the risk of an audit query that say we have not spent the money, but then spend the limited available resources responsibly, as we have been doing in the past. The other key issue was the issue of the sports regions. Just yesterday, Honourable Member, the Minister launched the National Sports Volunteer Corps. And I think those who had watched the news yesterday may have seen this. We have been training for a long time, and we're shaping the idea of what is the best mechanism and the best platform on which to engage regions. But we decided that we should not just have a regions program. Even if it serves the question of who really is a legend is a contractor. And many other people get very bitter and they feel isolated that they are not being considered legends. So we have over the last 2 months managed finally to agree on some working definition in South Court and the other that there has to be a criterion for the selection of so-called legends. And basically these are people who have represented the country, and not just have represented the country, but have also, as part of their representation, has won international accolades, whether in individual or team sports. And so, consequently, those that are within that. So, if I was to use soccer as an example, so the team of 96, which won the African Cup of Nations, would then qualify. They won international accolades. It's not all teams that represented South Africa abroad that won nothing. Those are not legends, because we also decided that we have to celebrate quality and not continue to celebrate mediocrity. I'm sure honorable members are aware that in many countries, sports persons and teams that lose in international tournaments and so on are really shunned by the country. Some extreme, and God forbid, does not happen in our country, but in here, a team that loses gets a hero's welcome at the airport. The government mobilizes people to go welcome a losing team. They must really get a cold shoulder. In fact, you must synchronize with SAA that they must arrive when there is no one at the airport. And they must find sweepers to clean the floors and everybody. And they must just be shut. I think that's the thing. We ought to start celebrating quality and stop celebrating mediocrity. I think that's the whole point. We've got to make sure that those who really win and make it, that they are grossly celebrated. And I'm sure those who may have seen the Zambia match would agree with us that you could see that they played against a very strong team, but it was nothing but sheer commitment that saw them through. And that is the type of commitment that's missing from our players. They are not willing to die for the country, and I think it is a challenge we're sitting with. And typically, we celebrate them even before they kick the ball. And I think this is the problem that we're having. They must really earn their stripes, and to that extent, we are handling the attitude in terms of what we're doing. So, yes, those will be sports legends, but we then decided in terms of the National Sports Volunteer Corps that we can't just work with the legends, because then the number is very narrow and quite few of the athletes. And we're looking at the support for the entire sports system. And if you consider that school sports is going to look ultimately in 3 years, at all the 2,000 schools, we need each and every person involved to volunteer and to be involved. And so we have also decided that there will be another category of all form of players, irrespective of whether they have won anything and so on. But these are players who have played professionally, they have been exposed to coaching and professional coach, they have played in the system and they understand what needs to be done. And also a category of community volunteers. There are many kids who themselves have never played sport, even teachers at schools who have been working with young athletes and so on. And you also have people who really don't have any coaching framework or coaching certificate, but who in the past have produced world champions. A case in mind is the coach of Cup of India. So people know that the gentleman has no formal coaching in athletics, but he has given us a gold medal, and I think it is something we have to look at and embrace all community volunteers and participants and bring them into the fold and make sure that all of them are then trained. We have had a good meeting with the CAP teacher, and it has agreed that all its funding within the sports chamber. They will obviously this year finish off most of their commitments, but in the next 2 to 3 years, all their funding will be geared towards the coaching framework. At least we want to give this leader an opportunity to be trained on level one, and some of them will have to go to level two and three. You'll find good players who now have been running small tournaments like 16 schools and so on, like Hugh Mazinga, but he has no specific coaching training. He's just doing it as part of his commitment and passion, but also because he has been exposed to coaching, that he has been coached. So he's now trying to coach us, but we have to go beyond that and formalize this. And yesterday when the minister was announcing this project, he also indicated that in future these children are going to refuse to be coached by people who are not educated that time, and that he was encouraging the sports leaders to go back to class and to go back and not be taught just on coaching, but also in formal academic sports administration courses, and that the department must help in that regard. This will partially answer the question of the plight of the men, because even if he's that good, but no team is willing to hire them as coaches, because they have no qualifications in coaching and so on. This will partially contribute towards that, but I think we should not create a wrong impression, because even yesterday we clarified to all the leaders and members of the volunteer corps to say that this is a volunteer program. While they will get stipends and other things to be able to travel between the ground and the school and where they stay and so on, and buy refreshments and so on, this is not a salary. So the last thing we want is for these people to start complaining and saying we're giving them peanuts and we have no honor for them and so on. they have always complained, many of them, that they have no common platform on which they could give that. And we're creating that platform. It will not answer their problems immediately. But one of the key things we are working on with the players' union is we are currently investigating the possibility of a national currency. While they are still active and playing, they've got to contribute towards this. Currently, the unemployment insurance fund can only pay them up until 6 months after employment. But that's it. It's done. They might have found another job. But the truth of the matter is that the industry there is, they are not going to be able to find another job if that is, and it's a challenge. And the other thing is that we're also discussing, it's still a debate. We are not anywhere near a conclusion to this debate. But the key debate we're having is the regulations on the sport and we continue allowing people below the ages of 18 to be contacted by teams on a professional basis. Because the lessons are that once these players they are contacted and they start earning a salary, many of them quit school and they do not study further or do anything. And we are continuing producing team players of quality in terms of skill, but not necessarily academically competent. And therefore, we're not building holistic individuals. And I think it's a debate we must look at it carefully because of the implications, and that we do not disrupt the development continuum of players. In fact, we must celebrate that we become professional quicker, but we've got to make it either a condition with their teams that those who are contracting players, you know, they've got to also cut in the salary and time off and all those things for people to start. But these are the debates we are currently working on to look at what is the best model to work on this and to achieve that. So the Flight of Legion is with us. Some federations are already doing this, what we are saying must be done quite well. And the players in rugby are the most good taking care of players. And they have good systems in place. And that's a condition of most of their contracts. They are also expected to have endowment policies and all those, and which are not. With football, it's not the same thing. And the majority of the players who are left out are in sports that, unfortunately, are traditionally black or predominantly black, boxing, football. So those are the even athletics. It's what you see many of them not really taking care of. But the cricket players and rugby players and so on. Majority of them are still looking. They do not suffer as we see others do. So we believe that the national insurance will work. I'm sure the players you know now is working with actuaries to look at what is the most sustainable scheme that could be done. But we're not here to support that, and perhaps in 2 years or so we may consider legislation relating to that. But it's still anything. On the issue of the lot of funding, the minister had requested 200 million and, from the lotto. We were supposed to receive the first tranche of 40 million now. But as members may be aware, the term of office of the sports chamber within the lotto, National Lottery Distribution Fund, has expired. And currently, those former members do not have mandate to decide on anything. And so there is a limbo between the appointment of the new board and the old one. So our minister has engaged with Minister Davis, and they have agreed that the current member's term must be extended by 3 months to enable them to process some of their final commitments. And then after which a new board, concurrently the process of appointing a new board will then go ahead. So as is, we haven't received any funding. We have already taken a decision that we will not handle the money ourselves. We have appointed the sports card as an agency to receive the money. We, from our experience working with the sports card, we have never had issues, no queries, no allegations of money rigging and charming money and so on. And the sports trust is a good vehicle because we also believe that other businesses must give money. And we have had engagements with the private sector. time we mentioned the first pastor, 3rd April, to receive the money. He has won confidence of many CEOs and presidents of companies, and that they have subsequently agreed to support us in terms of what we're doing. So we that's what we will do. The first pastor will be able to receive the money. We hope that the new board to be approved and process the rest of the funding as a start. But ultimately, the committee needs to note our proposal that in South Africa, like many other countries, good companies with good sports plans are all funded by the lottery. Their sports plans are funded on the lottery. But in UK, Australia, even in the US now, you see the same thing. But here, we, the sports people who argued for the lottery, are getting the least of the money. And there's no lottery dedicated purely to sport. I think many other successful companies. When we have one lottery which we share with them, and we are only getting 15% of the lottery money. The other goes to NGOs and with good causes and art and culture and this and that and job creation and all those. So is just 15%, and the 15% was in the past being used of other things. 1.3 million to that school there, this, that. But now we have a national sports plan. We think that all the money must be centralized and be used to fund the sports plan. And all these initiatives the minister is announcing must be funded out there. But we also understood the argument that says they were already predetermined contracts, some of them running for 2 years and so on. So we'll await the lottery to finish off all those. But 3-4 years from now, all the money in the sports chamber, the 15%, all of you will have to be used in that manner. But we're also thinking that the country should consider seriously a dedicated sports lottery for this purpose. Or rather, the same lottery must have a new product where all its revenues are dedicated to sports. Because right now, many people just buy the ticket. They do not know how the pie is shared, and many would prefer either just to give to art and culture, some would prefer just to give to sport. So it may be useful that when you buy the ticket, you know that you are buying it for sport. And people will then decide that I want the sports one, or I want this, or I want that. Because the current system really is not working for us as well, and we have to look at it. The issue of the municipal infrastructure grants, yes, we agree with the concerns on the government. The prioritization is crooked, and for this reason we have engaged with the National Treasury already. You will see that the funding beginning the financial year of municipalities 1 billion, we'll see the condition in the Gazette that says that 15% of the funding is reserved for sport. And we are taking a leap of faith rate because if it is reserved, we'll have to see. But we already understand the pressures. There are municipalities that are totally cash strapped. They can't even pay Section 57 managers. They can't even pay for major bulk services they are receiving and utilities. And as a consequence, the temptation always is to use that money for something else. And so we will look at how the 15% thing goes. We have already begun discussions with the Treasury around taking the money back into school. But I must ask them to indicate that members would require that the Building for Sport and Recreation program grant used to be with sports people. And in the past, we haven't done extremely well because about 90% of all the facilities we had called out are now in a state of disrepair. And I think it was because we were simply throwing facilities around without a specific plan. But we are waiting now on the National Facilities Plan. In its second draft, and we hope to complete it by June this year. We're also conducting an audit of all of the facilities in schools as well as in communities, and we want to see where the gaps are. We're hoping that by then, when we finalize the audit, we'll be able to determine that there's an emerging sense of what needs to be done in terms of this. And when I do make a presentation, I will touch on the regional sport council's response to what we're trying to do in terms of the facilities. Honorable member, there are males in the department. I took it for granted that the balance will indicate that they are males. So there are 114 males in the department. And honorable member, the intent who are there in our department, some of them have already received gainful employment. Some have been employed by other departments, and we were also using the process of restructuring to correct some of the anomalies. You find that we have an intern who has a diploma in HR, but this intern has been used as a PA. So when we took office, we decided that it doesn't help that intern learn anything, because the internship program is supposed to create a bridge between qualification and experience. And if now we are placing this person in an area where it doesn't work, it's not going to be useful to us nor to that person. And so we are repositioning them. We have reviewed the duration of their contract and so on, and we are on a pathway. I think most of them on the new structure, they would indeed find gainful employment. And I think that is our commitment, that if we are confident we are doing a good job in mentoring them, we should be confident to hire them. Otherwise, then we know that we are not crooked in what we do. So the issue of boxing SA, unfortunately the honourable members have raised out, but boxing SA, I think we have to look at it in context. Boxing South Africa is not necessarily a national federation for boxing. I think we must clarify, because the South African Boxing Association, there was this and that and many others, and boxing, unlike football, doesn't have one international federation. It has many. So boxing is more of a licensing box than an international federation. So a licensing board doesn't need so many people. Yeah. In all fairness, it should be, by its character and nature, a very small entity. And I think by design, it's correctly placed. In fact, comparatively speaking, it has more people than women. The budget, yes, we agree. While it has to be small, but the budget of 2 million indeed has been insignificant. And we have had discussions with Treasury in November, and indeed it has been agreed. We gave them an additional funding of 3.4 million, I think. We gave them off our own budget this year to help them out of the woods. The Uta General has met with the minister and has indicated that this major concern of boxing South Africa is a going concern. There was a time they couldn't pay their liabilities, and one of their major creditors was the Uta General. For about 3 financial years going backwards, they have not been able to pay the Uta General any time, and he had already handed them over to the sheriff, who was bound to attach their property. And when we looked at their balance sheet and their assets, it was not going to be enough, and so the sheriff would have had to come to us also to attach, because they are a public entity. We stand surety to them, and we have succession in view of their assets, and if they can't recover enough from them, they will have to recover from us. So we decided to intervene within that context, and the good thing is that the Treasury appreciated the situation. But that's not the end of the story. We have to support boxing going forward. One of the key things is that boxing must then generate its own revenue, correctly as it should. And right now, it has not been doing that very well. The minister has appointed a new board, there's a new CEO, and we think the future looks promising. The turnaround strategy we worked with them on in November, and which has been implemented, has at least now taken them off the list of the concerns of them being a going concern. And right now, as we speak, their balance sheet looks healthy, in the sense that they have been able to dispose of their liabilities. But this is a temporary intervention. The permanent solution must be alternative funding things for them. And one of the key things we are helping them with is sorting out their internal arrangements. We are looking at a separate bank account for purposes of collecting revenue. And we are introducing the compact spot bill on the program of Parliament. One of the requirements in that bill would be a clause that insists that all players in combat sport, including boxing and other martial arts, they will have to register for the purposes of. So concept of hockey will start collecting money. And for all international tournaments that are being sanctioned by hockey as a licensing board to the federation, to the individual federations, right? IBF, WBC, and so on, we'll all have to pay revenue to boxing for staging fights and all that. So that's one part of the puzzle. But the bigger part and the biggest funding revenue has to be broadcasting rights. And they've not been doing this very well, and there's not been boxing on TV for a long time. The minister has intervened with FABC Sport, and we are negotiating with FABC Sport to start collecting boxing matches, which will guarantee boxing a lot of revenue. And I think that the defense title of Manitanga, currently they are negotiating on another basis with FAB, the rights, and to give them some leverage on some money. But we're also helping them now with the regulations for broadcasting rights, and we have sent and supported our own staff members in legal affairs to work with them and to negotiate with them the deal with boxing on a long-term basis. So if those can succeed, indeed, I think the challenges about boxing South Africa will be an issue of the past. We rather worry about government issues than issues of funding, things and sustainability. I think that's really where we are with that. The issue of match fixing, the ticket commission was in the commission of our department. We will, however, ask for the report, and if it's available to us, we will share it with Parliament. But it wasn't our commission. Ours is Nicholas. We have also asked for the report on Operation Dragon from the police. We have never received it because the case was, the cases were withdrawn and built up, and there was a political decision to suspend the investigation. So we will have to look at that in the future, but the concerns pertaining to match fixing and so on, the minister has already requested staff to look into this matter. I think members must be aware of the limitations all government are having. It's not just us. Government all over the world in sport are having a difficult balance between intervention and so-called interference. And this is a thin line to work on. And it's quite difficult for us to decisively intervene. We are proposing an amendment to the Sports and Recreation Act. We have also placed it on the roll for the committee to consider. But key important thing is that we want to amend the powers of the minister, particularly around the registration and deregistration of federation. Powers to intervene when there is alleged corruption and maladministration. And powers to intervene in respect of national teams that have been selected and so on. So as is right now, the procedure we follow is that we ask the federations themselves, first and foremost, to look at the matter internally, and when they can resolve it satisfactorily, we then ask SASCOC to intervene, and when SASCOC can, only then we can enter the frame. And even when we do, we enter very cautiously, as you may have seen with the issue of cricket. Right now, the Sport and Recreation Act does not give the minister any power to constitute the Ministerial Committee of Inquiry. We have to rely on a clause in the TSM. And by hook or crook, the fact that we are giving them some money is that. But you see, if we were to be taken for court, and those people can prove that the money involved is not government money, it's someone's money, then that power falls off, and the minister can intervene. So now we want to change that. And this is even more important because we are looking at this tier funding formula. And so when we have not given a federation any money, that federation, if it's only spending money from the private sector, you can say to us, you don't care, you can't intervene, you know. And we want to change that. We want to give the minister powers to intervene at all times to be able. Obviously, guarded against this would be the fear of abuse of intervening even where it's not necessary. So the regulations of how the minister intervenes and the circumstances, the devil will lie in that detail of what we then say there. And I think that's what the safeguards will have to be placed in that area. But as a general rule, the minister must have the power to intervene. All international federations will have to understand that that is of the camps, obviously with the risk to the major federations like IOC and FIFA, if we intervene decisively, facilitating that interference and suspending our local federation from it. But I think that's the risk we have to take, because our country, in terms of good governance, is not at the level from sports where all these major countries are at, and we have to safeguard that to bring confidence to the process. The issue of the facilities in Northwest that are rotting and not being disused, I think my earlier answer must suffice, that only now we're working on a proper facilities plan, and only now we're in an audit of what's there and what's not there, and to what extent. In terms of this plan, there is an emerging consensus of classification of this facility into five major categories, and obviously category three being the most important one for us, within the regional sport hubs. But we have to look at the capacity of this facility, assess them, look at the surrounding facilities, the logistics surrounding the facility, and all those things, and also what they can do, and to decide in which part they get in. And this will also answer the problem of which is the municipal facility and what the municipal must be held, which is a provincial, which is a national facility, and which one, the division of responsibilities about what needs to be done, and also the norms and standards of if it is a category 2 facility, it must have the following things, as a general rule, it must be compliant in this manner, and acceptability must be in this way. So I think that's what we are looking at, but we will, in the second half of this year, come back to the portfolio committee to brief you fully about the work we have done on the facilities plan, because it is going to be very important for the success of sport, particularly access. And I think that's where, and also to address the transformational issues. Because while some good facilities are there, communities can only look at them and not access them. They will be told the facilities are owned by a private lab. And in our country, unfortunately, many good facilities are all in private sector. So I think we have to address those things, including accreditation. Should the sport and recreation be in the economic cluster? We are currently participating in that cluster, but we belong to the social cluster because government current mandate to us is on sports for change, on using the sports department for purposes and the sport itself for purposes of social cohesion and for integration. So that still remains a key agenda on us, and even in our spending pattern, this still features quite key. But going forward, yes, we agree. We are already working, and we have a working committee on what we call the economics of sport. We will, in the second half of this year, publish a document making a case for sports as a key economic contributor. And we will also look at all the other aspects that Honorable McKenzie is raising. Key to this is the fact that the limitation with our information is what I said. I think we have tried as much as possible not to look at indirect jobs in other sectors that would be considered pure tourism and security and safety and so on. We had looked specifically directly at jobs created in what you would traditionally take sports. You know. And so we also looked at professional players registered by federations. The rationale was to look at the players who are paid on a monthly basis consistently, not those who are signaled, who are paid only when they have qualified for an Olympics and they are going to the Olympics and they get up. We have not looked necessarily into those, and we have looked at only those that get funding and payment every month and so on, and the stadium administrators who are full time, so on and so forth. So this is all that we looked at, and we agree it's time for an accurate survey and to look at the direct as well as the indirect. In fact, our work on the case for sports will also look much more detailed on how we contribute to the not a 15-minute half-time, but a 30-minute half-time. And we use the first 15 minutes for the leaders to also share experiences about life, to also talk to these chiefs and children about HIV and AIDS, about responsible making of choices, about sport and the environment, about all these noble things we say sports must contribute. And so we don't want to stand alone. And so we're not going to divert millions of lives away. And so if we are to partner with LAFLAG, then when the coaching framework gets that, then LAFLAG, we can bring them in as trainers to the leaders who then are dispatched to communities. And that would cut what we have been giving them over the years by 75% or so. So we can rechannel and redirect the resources to where they are needed the most. So I think that's really where our negotiations are. So as you can imagine, they are not happy, but the strategy is beginning to shape up in that manner, and we are reviewing what we are doing with them. We have not been giving SCORE money for some time. We have given them money on an ad hoc basis, but the agreement with us is no longer a standing agreement like it used to be in the past. As and when they've got an interesting venture that we think makes sense, then yes, we can fund the venture. But one of the good things the minister has been able to do for them, so that we don't displace and destroy programs completely, was to agree with Adidas that we will continue funding some of their ventures. And they have done a good job. I think with Adidas, up until now, we have done 2 sporting fields, one in Mpumalanga, one in Limpopo, and they are doing well. I think we have changed the methodology, and also Adidas is doing it as part of their corporate social investment, but also with the view of getting their staff members to contribute to society. So you'll find on the specific day where the sports field is being rolled out, all Adidas employees are sent to that thing and they contribute labor and all this, and they partner with SCORE on this. So we will continue to have this ad hoc relationship with SCORE, and we will see as and when something enterprising or something that complements our work, we will obviously look at the available resources and see how we accommodate them. So the issue of database of volunteers, we have the database, we can make it available. In fact, we have been using some of the volunteers. Obviously, the limitation of us being placed in Pretoria means that it's largely the volunteers in Gauteng that have been utilized by ourselves. And as I'm the minister, that's how these programs. But these volunteers will surely again be used for the AFCON 2013, which we will be hosting. The football cap program, we have engaged with this. And when I present, you will see the strategic piece of what we are trying to do right now. Our biggest concern, which the minister has already communicated in respect of this program, first and foremost, is that our provinces elsewhere have done similar programs, but at a fraction of the cost than what they are currently paying for each and every one of the programs they are rolling out. And the second issue was that there was no specific strategy of where they are placing the was no formula. I'm sorry, where this thing must go next, you know, so to say. And we wanted to understand the rationale of how they choose the selected sites where the thing must go, and what basis do they do that, and to what extent do the municipalities commit to what's looking after the facilities themselves and maintenance and all those things. And then the other thing is that in areas like, if you take DR as an example, where it gets extremely cold and it gets extremely hot, the longevity of these facilities are in question, and therefore you need a different take on this. And then the other thing was that while it is a legacy of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, the truth of the matter is that the same facilities can benefit other sports. We were of the opinion that there has to be a strategic feedback with other federations on what could be achieved with this, and so that we don't generating, one is a good move, but we are worried about cooperative governance issues because it's now generating a lot of interest, but the money is not being rolled out as fast as it should, and with what we want to eradicate them. Such decisions must be made with the approval of the cuts, because you're going to set a terrible precedent about what could be done and what can be done. We are trying to put pressure to make sure that the CAF does meet, does decide on key programs and what needs to be done, and also for football development. We also want to dedicate some resources towards FAFA also taking responsibility for the leaks of their own plans, for the leaks that they are supposed to run on the under 17, under 23 basis, and we must have a kick list if football is to succeed. And right now we can't afford a situation where money is just somewhere and the cost is not meeting and no development work is being done, you know. So to this extent we are pushing hard to have the meeting of the trust to meet, and the minister will be meeting with the entire NEC of SAFA soon. This will be a closed door meeting because hopefully all the drafts will be off. We have to reshape football with all the issues of match fixing and with all the issues of qualification for the AFCON and every other thing. We haven't still received any satisfaction with the club, so we will look, and I think it's our first step in saying we want to see what's going to happen, and if they do not play ball, what happens to cricket will certainly happen in football. And I think our commitment to good governance remains unshakable. The issue of infrastructure grant for school sports and how it will aid job creation. Honourable Member, yes, we are looking at encouraging that all infrastructure being rolled out right now, largely being placed in schools. We have had meetings with a number of companies, including Rotary International and so on, and we're all along consistently been encouraging that everybody places their facilities in schools and that as much as possible local labour should be utilised. And to this extent, currently at the rate we are going, each and every one of these facilities and the multi-purpose courts that are being rolled out by province, on average they create jobs for about 18 people or so, depending on the program and what they are doing. But on average it's about 18 people who get jobs. It's all temporary jobs. They are not sustainable, but in the long run with the 52 regional sport hubs that we are looking at, you will see that that's where real job creation on a sustainable basis will then occur. And that's what we are looking at.
Thank you very much, I think we will tackle some of the issues as we can then move on. I think we should do so. And then I think we must allow, it's going to touch on them surely as he moves on the second presentation.
Chairperson, can you know that I will use page one issue, Chairperson, that I feel very, very strongly about? It is this issue of FIFA. FIFA is a law unto themselves, Chairperson. They cost this money, this country billions of rands to host that to host something that they gained so much from. Now that they must give money back to this country, money back to our players, Chairperson. You know, I felt so offended when I read that report the other day. And I think, really, you must take up this matter with SAFA. Because if they are not man enough, this country must be man enough to tackle FIFA, Chairperson. And really, their wings must be flipped, Chairperson. They are, I'm telling you, you get it, it's the sin they are dishonest people, Chairperson. Those are strong words, but that is the sins that I get, Chairperson. If a man changes his words so often, then I don't trust.